I'm Ian Peters, and I'm the Chief Executive of the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors. This initiative came about because in discussion with the profession, with the financial services sector, and with the regulators, we recognised that internal audit should have a key role to play going forward in ensuring we don't suffer a repetition of the financial crisis. So we've been working very closely with the profession and with the financial services sector and with the support of the regulators to produce this code of practice.
Internal audits in UK financial services is generally very good. And in fact, I said that in my covering letter to the draft recommendations. But there were some well-documented instances during the credit crunch where I think everyone feels that internal audit could have done more. There are good general internal audit standards issued by the Global Institute, but they're not industry specific. And I think the code that we're recommending both addresses that industry need, but also perhaps does raise the bar a bit in the UK. Remember, we're dealing with complicated financial services companies, which I think needs a high level of internal audit.
We've just been through the most serious financial crisis this country has ever known. And I believe that internal audit has a key role to play in ensuring that we don't go through a similar crisis ever again. So internal audit can provide the information and the assurance that the board needs in order to manage its risks effectively. This guidance is about giving internal audit the tools to ensure that it can do that.
I think, you know, we had an audit function in previous years which was not really fit for purpose for what we're about to go through in the changes in financial services industry. So I think to have something, you know, like this guidance which articulates, you know, how it should be structured, what it should look at, you know, and formalises its position in the company, in the governance structure of the company is very important.
It's really important for boards to be able to know that the culture, the strategy and the risk appetite that they have decided at board level is being fully and effectively implemented in an organisation. And the only people who can really give independent assurance about that is a robust, knowledgeable and fully independent internal audit function.
The new guidance is extremely important. This is the most significant change I've seen in internal audit guidance, whether from regulators or from the Institute in a long period. And it goes right to the root of the people that work in internal audit, the scope of their work, the standing, the mandate that audit has. I don't recall any other guidance that has gone to the root of internal audit and will have such a far-reaching implication.
The recommendation that the head of internal audit be at executive committee or equivalent level sends a big signal as to the influence that internal audit are expected to have now in organisations. And having someone of that status in the organisation should really be a big signal of that.
Internal audit must have the role and scope to be able to deliver. So it has to have access to all areas. It must be unrestricted. It must be able to look at all aspects of the business, whether that's the values of the business, whether it's the information and processes that lead to strategic decisions, whether it's the basis on which key corporate events occur. But internal audit must be unrestricted in its scope.
The audit of culture is one of the more difficult areas within the new standards. Certainly many internal auditors have not previously had an identifiable approach to auditing culture. The committee's expectation is that internal audit builds culture, the cultural dimension, into its audit work going forward, whether that is in relation to the organisation as a whole, as part of its approach to planning and prioritisation, or in relation to individual pieces of audit work.
Some of the key impacts from my perspective are going to be about the quality and the depth and the nature of the resources you're going to need and the different skill sets you are going to have to have an effective internal audit unit. And you will need a different mix than we've had in the past. You know, I think that will mean a greater requirement for business people that have audit skills and also audit technicians raising their business levels of awareness. So I think that will be one of the material impacts.
I mentioned before the effect on the scope of internal audit's work, and that effectively they have an unlimited scope. I think this might mean that internal audit will need to look at a broader range of skills than some internal audit departments have looked at in the past. And that might mean co-sourcing, it might mean bringing people in from other areas of the organisation. But certainly I think it's the risks which should drive the skills that are employed, not the skills that are available drive the work.
I think every audit function is going to have to really very carefully examine itself. It's going to have to be more strategic and top-down. Audit are going to have to get engaged with strategy, with setting risk appetite, and with cultural issues in a way that they probably haven't had to do before.
I think the implications of the guidance for internal audit functions are that potentially internal audit can be an even more satisfying career path for people than has been the case in the past. If internal audit really does live up to the expectations that are implicit in the guidance, then the potential that internal auditors have to make a real difference to the success of their organisations is enhanced, and hopefully that will allow us to attract and retain really good people in the internal audit profession.
One of my hopes, the things that comes out of this guidance, and you know, all the attention that is being put on the internal audit space at the moment, is that it achieves its rightful state within the organisation as a credible place in the organisation to spend a part of your career. I have a strong view that actually senior leaders in financial services in the next few years are going to have more credibility in their backgrounds from a risk and control function. So, and at the moment you can rise to a senior position, you can have a period in risk. What I'd like to think is that senior people in financial services will also have a period of their career spent in credible internal audit units, and that will be an essential part of their CV as they go through the organisational hierarchy.
I think the organisation in which internal audit operates should expect a different internal audit going forward. They should expect an internal audit which is more intrusive, has the remit to look at more areas than previously, and has the standing to be more challenging of management. I think for many internal auditors this will be an opportunity. I think for many organisations they may see this as a threat. It is certainly one of the last pieces to be put in place post-crisis to improve risk management for the organisations as a whole. I think many chief executives and audit committee chairs will welcome the difference that this makes to internal audit.
I think non-executive directors, on the back of this guidance, are going to have to get even more involved in setting the objectives for internal audit, in approving the plan, and in taking a close direct interest in what goes on in internal audit, rather than currently quite a lot of that comes from the executive, and I think in future it's going to have to come from the non-executive.
Internal audit is here to help the board and help the executive ensure that the organisation's risks are being managed effectively, and that means that internal audit has to have their backing and their support. But most importantly, it means there has to be a good relationship between internal audit and the executive, certainly, but also between internal audit and the non-executives. The non-executives have to understand the role that internal audit plays. They have to develop the relationship with internal audit. There has to be regular engagement.
In many organisations, the new standards should lead to a difference in internal audit as far as executive and non-executive management are concerned. Management should expect internal audit to have lifted its sights, to be reporting far more on strategy, on risk appetite, on governance, a lot of the key areas which we, as part of the code, asked audit to focus more on.
I think in future they should expect their audit functions to be much more involved in strategic decisions. They should actually ask their internal audit maybe much more than they have hitherto. If there's a big decision to be taken, has internal audit looked at the way this decision has been taken? Has internal audit looked at the materials, at the information that has been used to take this decision? Does that seem to be reasonable? Does it seem to be reasonably complete? Have the executive taken the amount of external advice that internal audit considers necessary.
To be a non-executive director of a financial services organisation is a really tough job. There are a whole host of expectations placed on you and regulatory obligations that you're now expected to meet. And it's very difficult to meet those expectations given the limited amount of time that you have available and the limited amount of information that you have available too. And this is where I think internal audit can make an increased contribution to helping non-executive directors live up to their responsibilities.
The challenge really begins now to adopt the guidance and to fully implement it. And we also look to the regulator to play its part, and I fully expect that the regulators, both regulators, will be very interested to see how far the financial services sector is embracing the code and implementing it. Going forward, the Institute's job is to keep the code under review, and after a reasonable time, we'll be looking to see whether it's still fit for purpose, whether it needs further development, and we'll certainly be looking for feedback from the sector on how well it's working.
We're going to hand this code over to the Institute now, and it's obviously up for the Institute to decide whether to adopt it or not. It's also up for the regulators to decide their view of it and to the extent that they will expect adherence to it. We made it clear that compliance should be proportional to the size and the complexity of the individual company. Clearly a small branch wouldn't expect to comply in the same way as a very large organisation. But the code is principle based, so we would hope that compliance with the spirit of the code is possible, even though compliance with the letter of the code may differ by organisation.
Ernst & Young have been delighted to have been part of this project from inception through to delivery of this final code. We recognise implementation now lies with you, and we're more than happy to help, whether it be through providing advice on how to audit some of the more difficult areas like culture, or providing subject matter resources to help you get audit work done in the new areas which we've listed. We recognise that this is a significant step forward for the sector, and we wish you the best of luck in implementing what we think will be a code for internal audit, which will lead to a more robust financial services sector.